response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Trash Talk with TK, day after Eagles reaction podcast. And what a win we have to talk about today as the Eagles go into Dallas. The Eagles dominate the Cowboys. They pummel the Cowboys. Final score of 34-6. And hey, if you listened to me last week on WIP, you know I was nervous about this game. I thought there was an uncertainty around the Eagles going to Dallas and playing a team that was playing their backup quarterback, a team that theoretically was fighting for the life of their season on Sunday. It's a place the Eagles had won since 2017. My fears were unfounded. And the Cowboys, I mean, let's start. The Cowboys are a terrible team. That is clear. And Cooper Rush is a really bad quarterback. I don't know how the Cowboys previously to this had gone 5-1 with him starting before. That being said, the Eagles did what good teams, what Super Bowl contending teams should do to a team like the Cowboys. And they went down there. And they whooped them all over the field. It was not great in the first half, and the offense struggled a little bit, and the quarterback struggled a little bit, and we'll get to that as we move forward here. But overall, I mean, that was a dominant victory, and the Eagles did everything that they had to do. And, you know, just to start, before we really get into the game and break down the defense and the offense, just kind of surreal, I think, that we're in this position where the Eagles are right now. Because I was just thinking about it last night after the game, sitting at home. And it wasn't that long ago, man, that they went into the bye 2-2. They had played a bad game in Tampa Bay where the defense got completely carved up. The offense struggled. You come out of the bye week. You play Cleveland at home in a game that you should obviously win. Cleveland's a really bad team. And the Eagles kind of scuffled in that game. They win it 20-16, but things didn't look right, and they didn't have a ton of guys out for that game. I mean, the offense was healthy for that one, besides Dallas Goedert, of course. But you didn't feel at that point like this was a season that was heading in the right direction. I mean, we talked a lot about it on the radio, all the Nick Sirianni stuff after that game, and I thought Nick handled the stuff after that game pretty unprofessionally, whether it was fighting with the fans, whether it was bringing the kids to the press conference. I mean, it just didn't feel like this season was trending in the right direction. And if you told me at that point that we'd be sitting here a month later and the Eagles would be 7-2, and we'd be feeling like this team is one of the five best teams in football, I would have said you're crazy. And that's where we are at this point. Like, I look at the teams around the league, and I think the Eagles are one of the five best teams in football. I think you got, obviously, Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore in the AFC, who are all really good. And then the NFC, you got Detroit. Aside from that, I think the Eagles are probably the next best team. And not just winning these last four games, because you look at the schedule, and I'm sure that's going to be a big part of the conversation as we move forward prior to Thursday. And the Eagles can put a lot of this to bed on Thursday night. You go out and you beat a 7-3 Commanders team. I think that's going to quiet a lot of this chatter down. But you look at the last 4 weeks here, it's the Giants who are awful. It's the Bengals who, hey, I still think the Bengals are good. I still think the Bengals are going to find their way into the playoffs in the AFC. But as of now, they have a losing record. Jacksonville, who's really bad, and the Cowboys, who without Dak Prescott are really bad. But the Eagles aren't just winning these games. They're dominating the better part of these games. Like a 28-3 win over the Giants. A 20-point win in Cincinnati over the Bengals. The Jaguars end up getting back in that game, but still, I mean, we saw the Eagles for 2.5 quarters were the dominant team in that game. And it's the NFL. Teams do kind of get back into games. Not an excuse, but it does happen. And then you see what we saw yesterday. And This is the sign of a good football team, and it's why I feel differently than last year. And last year, I was one of the people who was saying, hey, win's a win. I don't care how it looks. Just find a way to win the game. And that's true to an extent, but it does give you more confidence when your team is just obliterating opponents like this. And that game yesterday, I thought was a real testament to where this team is. And again, the Cowboys are really bad, but that's exactly what you're supposed to do to bad teams. You can't pick the people you play. Like, you can't control that. All you can do is go out and dominate teams you should dominate. And this team's starting to remind me more of the 2022 Eagles than the 2023 Eagles. And obviously, that's what you want to see. That's something I hadn't really felt until yesterday. But I feel like this team's more reminiscent at this point of the 2022 team than the 2023 team. And, you know, when we talk about this game yesterday, obviously, there are some good things that we saw on offense. And after a slow start, Jalen Hurts kind of turned it on. But where I got to start is with this defense, man. Because I am so impressed with what they are doing on that side of the ball. And again, go back to that Tampa Bay game. I mean, they got destroyed by Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. The tackling was atrocious. They couldn't cover. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't really do anything. And over the last month, this has been clearly one of the best defenses in all football. I mean, they are dominating, and it's really at every level. And as far as just individual players go, and we'll get to a few different individual players who have been incredibly impressive. But the season that Zach Bond is having, I can't remember an Eagle linebacker having a season this good in a really long time. And I know a few people have kind of mentioned, oh, well, TJ Edwards in 2022, guys like that. TJ Edwards in 2022 was solid. He's not having the difference-making season that Zach Bond is having this year. Like, and I haven't watched, you know, I'm not watching every team in the NFC every week and, like, breaking down their linebacker play. But through nine games, it's hard for me to think there are a lot of linebackers playing better football than Zach Bond and having more of an impact than Zach Bond. Getting after the passer, forcing turnovers, recovering turnovers. Yesterday, two forced fumbles, a fumble recovered. You think back to that Green Bay game, the pressure that he was putting on Jordan Love. He was a massive factor in that game. And I think Zach Bond could end up being an all-pro this year. Like, that's the kind of season he's having. And it will kind of overshadow the fact that Kobe Dean is having this really good season. You're getting great linebacker play. When's the last time we saw that? I mean, last year, you're running guys out there like Zach Cunningham and Anthony Morrow, and they're just getting torched on a weekly basis. Now, I think a part of it is the coordinator. Vic Fangio obviously knows what he's doing. Vic Fangio is a big part of the reason the Eagles brought a guy like Zach Bond in. Vic obviously envisioned a role for him in this defense and thought he could be productive. And hey, that's turned out to be correct. So, incredibly impressive stuff for the linebackers. I continually, on a week-to-week basis, am just floored by how well these young corners are playing on the back end. I mean, Quinyon Mitchell is quietly having one of the best rookie seasons ever because you don't hear his name a lot. That's a good thing. Like, that is a good thing for a rookie corner. And for comparison's sake, the two rookie corners who were largely the consensus one and two guys going in the draft this year were Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold. I'm not watching the Lions every week. I mean, they're on TV a decent amount, so I'm watching a decent amount of Lions, but every Lions game I watch, you know, Terrion Arnold is either, you know, getting beat on a big play or is being flagged for a big penalty. And I've seen way more negative plays from Terrion Arnold this year than I've seen from Quinyon Mitchell. And there was a play yesterday in the game where Quinyon Mitchell, it's something small, but it's something so important and something so rare to see from a rookie, where it's not an interception, it's not a pass breakup, the receiver catches the ball, but he comes down out of bounds. And it's just so beautifully played by Mitchell on the outside, where you can't position your body any better than he does. Where it's like, okay, if you were in the right spot, if you were in the right position as a cornerback, sometimes it doesn't matter if the guy catches the ball. Because if you are where you need to be, if your body placement is where it needs to be, your fundamentals are perfect, then you leave the guy no room to come down. And the receiver makes the catch, and nice catch, but you have no area to land in bounds. And he's not making illegal contact. He's not committing pass interference. He's not making a play on the ball. But when you're doing all these other things right, it really doesn't matter. And Quinyon Mitchell this year, the kid has been a home run pick. I mean, an absolute home run. To come in and start from day one at that position in the NFL, which I think cornerback, if we're talking about difficulty of positions, aside from quarterback, I think cornerback is the most difficult position to play in the NFL. You are on the fence of every play. I mean, the receivers have the advantage. They know where the play is going. They know where the route's supposed to be run. Everything is reactionary. You are playing on your heels. You are going up against the best athletes on the field. Because you look at the NFL, the best athletes are the guys who are playing wide receiver. And this guy is almost flawless over there. Like, you're not seeing him get burned. You're not seeing him commit penalties. And I don't know if he's going to get the award, because usually that does go to guys with numbers. And you look at Quinyon's numbers, the numbers aren't going to jump off the page at you. But if you're watching on a week-to-week basis, Quinyon Mitchell, in my opinion, should be the defensive rookie of the year. Like he's just been outstanding from day one, so he's been incredibly impressive. Cooper DeJean has fundamentally change what this defense looks like. And I think they're, it's not as simple as, oh, you make one change and the defense looks a lot better. Or is fixed, rather. It's a lot of things. Like, a lot of guys are playing better on that side of the ball. There's no question about that. But the upgrade from Avante Maddox to Cooper DeJean has been incredible. Like, Cooper DeJean, who, again, another very difficult position to play in the NFL. That slot corner position, which used to be kind of a specialty spot, it's now a starting position in the NFL. Most teams are coming out, and they're playing 11 personnel, which is one tight end, one running back, and three receivers. So you're going to have your nickel alignment on the field the majority of the time. It's just the way it works. And Cooper DeJean is, I mean, the guy's just a football player. I don't know what other way to put it. He loves contact. He always seems to be around the football. He's physical. And he's not the biggest guy, but you can tell he packs a punch, man. He's a great tackler. I thought he did a great job when he was on CeeDee Lamb yesterday. And the secondary as a whole is playing really good football. I think your worst secondary player this year has probably been C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And he was fine yesterday, but if he's your worst secondary player, you're in pretty good shape. And the defense as a whole, man, the defensive line improving. I still think your edge rushing situation's not ideal, but you're getting pushed from the interior. Your secondary play and your linebacker play has been so good that it's made the Eagles less reliant on getting to the quarterback and getting pressure all the time. And this is not the way the Eagles' defenses have traditionally been built. They've been built by, we're going to start up front, we're going to get to the passer, and we're going to kind of fill in the gaps behind that. And Howie Roseman deserves credit for changing the approach and changing the philosophy. And I was against that. I thought the Eagles going with philosophy that's, you know, not been perfect, but over the course of the last 25 years, really since Andy Reid took over, it's worked, which is, we're going to build up front and we're going to kind of fill in behind that.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
They decided, no, you know, we're going to do things a little differently. And we think there are these two corners at the top of the draft who are good enough to where they can change our defense. And it certainly seems like that was the right calculation by Howie and by the front office. And I'm so impressed with the defense. Think about this, and I get that Cooper Rush is the quarterback. They gave up 49 passing yards yesterday. The Cowboys' average yards per completion was 1.5 yards per completion yesterday. I mean, again, the tackling has improved so much because that doesn't happen without great tackling. Guys catch the ball. You still got to get them on the ground. They've done a great job of doing that. And just being just really stingy in coverage. And obviously, so much credit's got to go to Vic Fangio, who turns out to be a tremendous hire. And I think both Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore have been tremendous hires. And Vic Fangio has done a great job with this defense. But a really impressive game from the defense yesterday. That was really kind of my biggest takeaway. As far as the offense goes, kind of a weird game where they start poorly. I mean, you're gifted a touchdown basically by a Cooper Rush fumble. And then a play where 3rd and 7, one of the funniest plays of the year, where the Eagles just throw a little pass out the flat for Saquon Barkley. There are 4 defenders there. He shouldn't, has no business getting this first down. It just looks like nobody wants to tackle him. I mean, I do think that was partially because you played a Cowboys team yesterday that is already ready for this season to end. I mean, Micah Parsons basically saying after the game, I'm not playing for Mike McCarthy, I'm playing for my teammates. Yeah, it's a great culture they have down there in Dallas. But like, Saquon Barkley is so imposing, the guys don't even want to get in his way. They don't even want to tackle him. But you get the touchdown there. And after that, the offense looks pretty lifeless the remainder of the half. And I tweeted out during the game, and a lot of people didn't like what I had to say based on my replies. It's Twitter, so you can never really take that as fact or anything. But I felt like Jalen Hurts was holding the offense back. I did not think Jalen Hurts played well for the first, 28 minutes of the game until the Eagles got the ball back in the last 2 minutes. He turned the ball over a couple times, something that he hadn't been doing of late. He was holding the ball too long. He took 5 sacks. You can't have it. And I don't think the sacks were mainly on the offensive line. I think a lot of them were Jalen trying to hold the ball too long and trying to make plays. And, you know, I think with Jalen, again, and it's not unique to him, but I think people get very, sensitive when you critique the quarterback, and especially a quarterback that people like. And I know from experience, I used to feel this way about Donovan McNabb. When Donovan would get criticized a lot, I'd take exception to it because I thought Donovan McNabb was one of the best quarterbacks in football. And I think with Jalen, it's interesting because he's not what I think many people thought he would be. Like, in the beginning of Jalen's career, and watching him in 2021, watching him in 2022, I thought, okay, this is a guy who's going to be pretty steady. You know, you're not going to have a lot of peaks and valleys with Jalen. He's kind of going to be what he is, and he's got some physical limitations, but he's got some physical attributes, like his running, that makes him unique. It makes him dynamic. But I thought overall, like, he's going to be pretty steady. You're kind of going to know what you're going to get week to week, game to game. That's not really what Jalen is, though. Like, what I've come to realize with Jalen is he is a far more volatile player, where he does have these low lows where he'll have in the first half of that game where you watch him and you're like, he is just crushing this offense because he's not playing well enough right now. But then he'll find it, and this is his greatest attribute, is that you hear the expression all the time, on to the next play, you know, short memory, all those cliches. He has that, and he can bounce back, and he doesn't spiral when things go poorly. Like, I'm watching the game last night, Jared Goff throws 5 interceptions. It looked like he was spiraling, kind of found it at the end, but all of a sudden, Jalen leads a drive at the end of the first half, a beautiful 2-minute drill. The Eagles score a touchdown, then he plays a great second half. And I think that's what's unique about Jalen Hurts, and what's different about what I thought he was going to be, was I thought he's going to kind of be this steady guy who, yeah, you'll have good games and you'll have bad games, but they're not going to be extremes. What's crazy with Jalen, though, is I do think he's got these real extremes to his game, where sometimes you look at him and you say, he is killing this offense that is ultra talented. But other times you'll watch him, and it can be in the midst of the same game like it was yesterday, where he's holding the ball, he gets away from the sack, and he makes a great pass. And like he did on the Goddard touchdown, like he did on the Johnny Wilson touchdown. And I think with the holding the ball, that's kind of a give and take. It's kind of a blessing and a curse. I mean, sometimes you'll get frustrated because he'll take the sacks, they'll be drive killers, but other times, when he holds the ball and he can get out of the pocket and he can make those big plays, you'll take it as well. There's a lot more volatility to his game than I thought there would be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's something that is hard to react to in game, because I was frustrated in the first half yesterday, because I thought this is a game the Eagles should put away. This is a game that shouldn't be close. It is, because Jalen's not playing well enough, but then he bounces back, makes the big plays, and I do think there's a higher ceiling to his game than I thought, but there's also a lower floor. And it's about kind of managing that, and I think Jalen can do a better job of managing that in game, is knowing there's a time and place where I do want to hold him more. I do want to kind of create and make plays, but there are other times where it's just like, dude, you got so much talent. Just get the ball out, get it where it needs to go, and operate as a game manager. But it's, in the end, turned into a decent Jalen Hurts game. But I just think he's a fascinating player, and he's one of these guys where you look at sometimes, you think, this guy's a Super Bowl quarterback. You look at him other times, you think, this is what's going to stop the Eagles from winning a Super Bowl. And I feel like we got the whole Jalen experience yesterday. But I thought the offense overall was able to come through. Obviously benefited by some turnovers and the fact Cowboys offense stinks, but they were able to do that as well. But real quick, before we look ahead to the Commanders, and I'll be on WIP Tuesday night with Ashland Sullivan, so we'll obviously break a lot of this down heading into Thursday. But we got to give credit to Nick Sirianni here, and I was critical of him after the Cleveland game. I'd say by and large I've been a Nick defender more than I've been a Nick hater. But the job that he has done, man, I mean, you can't argue with the numbers. 41-19 in his first 60 games as head coach of this football team. To bounce back after the Cleveland, because after that Cleveland game, he was the talk of the NFL. The talk of the NFL was, how is this guy a head coach? He is embarrassing himself. This is not professional behavior. And for the players to rally around him, because you don't get these results without players caring and without players rallying around you. Again, look at Dallas yesterday. Mike McCarthy's lost that team. They don't want to play for him. Look at Chicago, where I'm watching a lot of that game in the 1 o'clock hour, the 1 o'clock window before the Eagles Cowboys come on. That team has completely quit on Matt Eberflus. Like the fact that the Bears didn't fire him today is a disgrace. You score 3 points against the New England Patriots at home, a team that you were far more talented than. I mean, that's an embarrassment. And you look around the league, you see it all the time. These teams who just don't play for guys. And this team, you know, they haven't quit on Nick. I think at the end of last year, they kind of did a little bit. And that wasn't, I wouldn't say it's solely on Nick, but that's a hard thing to recover. Like, that's a hard thing as a coach to kind of earn back and get back. And I feel like he has. And overall, he's done a tremendous job here. Here this team sits at 7-2 going into Thursday night against the Commanders. And this is obviously a monster game for the division. But you win this game, and we can really start having conversations about the number one seed. I mean, if you win this game, I won't, certainly after last year, when we thought after the Eagles beat Dallas in their first meeting here, which was about a year ago to the day, a little over a year, I think, we felt like the Eagles were in a great spot for the division. Obviously, a lot can happen. They fell apart. They had a much more difficult schedule last year, obviously, but things didn't go as planned. That being said, man, you're in a position now where you win this game, you move to 8-2, The Commanders would drop to 7-4. You'd have a game and a half leading the division with a game in hand over Washington. And you'd be undefeated in the division to this point. You look at the Eagles' schedule ahead. There should be a lot of easy wins on the schedule here. You got Carolina at home, the Giants at home, the Cowboys at home with Dak out for the year. Those should be three victories. So you're talking about you win this game. You look at those, and I think it's fair to say the Eagles should absolutely win those games. You're at 11 if you're counting those as likely victories for the Eagles. Your other games, at the Rams, at the Ravens, I think you're looking at those on back-to-back weeks. You win one of those two games, especially if you beat Washington, I'd be fine with that. Like, if you beat Washington, you win one of the Rams or the Ravens, I'll take that. And then, you know, Steelers at home, I think a very winnable game. Like, the Steelers are good. I don't think they're great. I certainly don't think their offense is great. So you start looking at this thing, man, and you can really see a pathway to getting that number one seed. And one thing that we know in this day and age in the NFL, with the playoff expansion, seven teams, getting that one seed, having that only bye, is such a monumental advantage. It is. I mean, you look at the last couple of years, the teams that have the bye typically go to the Super Bowl. I mean, both teams that had the bye last year, the 49ers and the Chiefs, went to the Super Bowl. The year prior to that, Eagles and the Chiefs went to the Super Bowl. I mean, 2021, trying to remember 2021, the Bengals did not have the bye. They won the AFC Championship game in San Francisco. And yeah, Green Bay had lost to San Fran as well. So in 2021, that was kind of the aberration. But typically, man, you get the bye, you get that one bye week, and you have to win two home games, go to the Super Bowl. That'll put you in a great spot. And that's the position the Eagles kind of find themselves in right now. And yeah, I mean, Detroit is good, but if you can get that one seed, that means you pretty much would avoid them until the NFC Championship game. Maybe they get knocked off before that, and if you did play them, you'd play them here. And I think that's a big advantage with the crowd that you have and with Detroit's record at home. I mean, they've been really good at Ford Field, so if you can get that, you'd be in a great position. Thursday night's obviously a huge game. And should be really fun, but a great win for the Eagles. They're in a great spot. Never would have thought this 4 or 5 weeks ago, but they are in a tremendous spot. We have a season, and we have a team that is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. So, obviously, a great game, and hope everybody enjoys this one for a little bit until a massive game on Thursday. I can't wait for Thursday night. It's going to be awesome. Very excited to talk about it with you all on WIP tomorrow night, Beyond from 7 to 11 with Ashlyn Sullivan. And then I'll be back Thursday night, obviously, for the Eagles halftime show. And then Friday night from 6 to 10, solo on Friday night. So that'll be a lot of fun as well, breaking down this game on Friday night on WIP. So very excited for everything coming up this week. But thank you to everybody for listening. Make sure you listen and subscribe. I'll post all of my shows on here from WIP. Also be doing these day after game reaction podcasts. So make sure you're tuned in. Appreciate everybody listening. And I'll talk to you tomorrow night on WIP.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.